Believe it or not, literature, stories of flying saucer abductions, spontaneous human combustion, lost continents, trans-channeling, and astral travel have been the lifelong interest of Ted Schultz. He's the editor of The Fringes of Reason, the latest edition of the Whole Earth Catalog, and he's a former editor of the Whole Earth Review. Schultz describes his new book as a carnival of unorthodoxy with a twofold purpose, to entertain and debunk.
First and foremost, the idea of the book is to be a celebration of strange, unorthodox beliefs. Whether or not these ideas are true, I think one can enjoy them and celebrate them as examples of human creativity. Then I think, secondly, the book also attempts to evaluate whether or not these things are true, which is quite separate from whether we can enjoy them or not as ideas and concepts. So I try to do both. And the way that I try to do the second thing, evaluate whether they're true or not, is by giving a diversity of opinion. I tried to include the opinions of true believers as well as the opinions of skeptics.
You have an essay in The Fringes of Reason about alternate geographies, and these are, for instance, people who still believe that the Earth is flat.
Yes.
What I find interesting about that is the persistence in believing something in spite of all the contradictory evidence around you.
Yes. I find that to be one of the most appealing things about believers in strange beliefs. I guess that tells me that there's something about adopting a coherent worldview and doggedly sticking to it that that is essential for people in general, I think. And most of us consider ourselves slightly more reasonable, and therefore we would adopt a slightly more reasonable worldview, and we might adjust it in the face of contrary evidence, whereas these folks, evidence has very little to do with it. It's the worldview itself and what that does for them psychologically and sociologically, too, because it binds these people together into a tightly knit group of believers who often have their beliefs reinforced by the very derision and disagreement of everyone else around them.
You've collected strange but true literature for years. Do you have any favorite brochures or books in your collection?
Well, you mentioned alternate geographies, and some of the Hollow Earth literature is among my favorite. There's a book, for instance, called The Hollow Earth, The Greatest Geographical Discovery Ever Made, which I mailed away for when I was, I think, in eighth grade. I saw an ad in Fate magazine that said things like, what is the mysterious world that Admiral Byrd discovered beyond the poles? Why is pollen found sprinkled across icebergs every winter? Why do some birds fly north in the winter? Why do warm currents flow down from northern regions? I mailed away for this book, and it just expounded on this whole theory of how the Earth is not a solid sphere. It's a hollow shell, and there are vast openings at the poles, so vast that if you sail across the curvature of the opening, it's akin to sailing across the curvature of the Earth. You don't notice it. And soon you're inside this world that has vast seas and continents on the inner side of the shell. There's a central sun suspended at the center that lights this whole inner world. And there are civilizations in there that pilot flying saucers, and that's who we see flying around in unidentified flying objects. And dinosaurs live in there, and woolly mammoths are still alive in there. It was great.
Well, it explains everything. No, it's just really, it just explains everything.
Well, that's the way a lot of these sort of alternate belief systems are. They do. They explain everything. Origin of flying saucers, where you go when you die, who's running the show.
In 1973, you went to California to explore the New Age movement. What inspired you to do that? Were you a seeker yourself, or were you going as a skeptic?
I wasn't a skeptic. I was a seeker. I had spent 2 years in college. I was dissatisfied with what academia had to offer. And meanwhile, I discovered Eastern mysticism. A lot of the books I was reading at the time that really impressed me had San Francisco imprints on the publisher pages, so I decided the San Francisco Bay Area was the place to be. So I went out there with a totally open mind, and I spent a dozen years probably exploring all sorts of alternate belief systems, especially spiritual, mystical type systems, with the hopes of finding something larger than life.
And did you?
I think I did. It's not, I think, anything specific in any of these belief systems. I think what I discovered had more to do with psychology, I guess lessons about personality and what it is, what it means to be at peace with yourself, to be genuinely motivated, to pursue your interests, whatever they might be, and things that are, I guess, sort of the more ineffable aspects of alternate states of consciousness. Meanwhile, I discovered that the specific belief structures that were being offered in New Age San Francisco were pretty much mutually contradictory. Each thing described a cosmology, a way that the universe functioned, that simply did not agree with one another. And I think a big lesson I learned there was that you simply can't believe all these systems.
You went from your explorations of the New Age movement in San Francisco to becoming a scientist studying insect evolution. To me, that seems like a really drastic change.
Yeah. I don't, I've naturally had a lot of time to think about that, and I've come to the conclusion that it's not such a drastic change. I went to San Francisco to explore the New Age, and I've explored strange belief systems all my life, mainly because I wanted to know how the world really functioned. The realization I came to that all these cosmological systems did not mesh, and that there had to be some objective standard for evaluating whether something was true or not, led me to the scientific method. I realized that whereas the scientific method may not be able to say very much about inner states, subjective reality, imagination, and states of consciousness, it has a whole lot to say about external reality, objective reality. And I've always been fascinated with what is real. Nature, it seems to me, is undeniably real. And that has led me to this strangest of all pursuits yet.
Now, you say that nature is undeniably real, but yet, you have a whole essay devoted to people who are out hunting for the Sasquatch.
Right.
So these monster hunters are of great interest to you.
Oh, yeah.
Even while you're busy studying real insects.
Yeah, especially because most of them are PhD biologists firmly established in academic institutions. So they're not, you know, you can't completely dismiss them as nuts. Basically, we're talking about biologists who are also romanticists, who like to believe that there are some large undiscovered animals that still exist.
Ted, do you have a lot of hate mail sitting on your desk written by people who feel offended that you've contradicted their worldview?
I have some. I've gotten a lot of letters from people that say, I loved your book. It really targeted a lot of things that were long in need of criticism, but you made a big mistake when you talked about my favorite belief of blank. You know, I have lots and lots of letters like that.
Well, Ted, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you.